welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Monday, March 15th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. Our first article on the front page. Biz Buzz, New Galena Gym, A Natural Fit for Owner by Jeff Montgomery, Telegraph Herald editor. Biz Buzz shares business tidbits from the tri-states. In addition to this update from Galena, Illinois, we will highlight developments from Dubuque and Elkader in Tuesday's edition. A local entrepreneur with an extensive training background recently opened a new gym in Galena. The fitness boundary is located at 1135-8 Industrial Avenue Drive and offers group classes, personal training, and access to cardio equipment and weights, according to owner Jasmine Stower. For Stower, her new role as a gym owner seems like a natural fit. Quote, "For my entire life, I have always been an active person, someone that worked out and took care of my health," she said. "With this business, I can have a positive impact on somebody else," end quote. In addition to playing sports throughout her life, Stower has worked with elite athletes and obtained multiple degrees that prepared her to operate this business. She obtained a bachelor's degree in exercise science from University of Dubuque and ultimately returned there to earn a master's degree in business. Stower also has served as the general manager at other gyms and worked with the University of Northern Iowa football team as a strength and conditioning coach. The Fitness Boundaries opening comes just a couple of weeks after Galena Fitness closed its doors. Stower said some of her members transitioned from that gym, while many of her members were unaffiliated with that enterprise. So far, she has been pleasantly surprised by the wide net cast by her fitness facility, noting that many of her customers have come from outside of Galena. Quote, "Members have been coming from all over," she said. "We had people from Dubuque, from East Dubuque, Hanover, Elizabeth, and Menominee. It's been great to see that," end quote. Stower said each person who tours the facility is treated to a complimentary, quote, "equipment orientation," end quote, that allows them to get acquainted with the various strength and cardio machines and learn how to use them properly. Quote, "This is so important to make sure people are getting the most of that equipment and also avoid injury," end quote, she said. The Fitness Boundary offers members access 24 hours per day, 7 days per week. The location is generally staffed from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on weekdays. Interested customers can learn more or secure a membership by calling 563-213-6729 or visiting fitnessboundarygalena.com. Our next front page article, virus relief to play varied roles in area economy. More than 90% of area households qualify for direct payments, which could be a lifeline for many local residents, by Benjamin Fisher. Local experts say direct payments and childcare dollars in Congress' most recent pandemic response package could help the area economy in different ways based on the different recipients of the funds. The American Rescue Plan was passed by Congress and signed by President Joe Biden last week as the next package to address impacts on public health and that of the economy from the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. It is a massive $1.9 trillion stimulus with dozens of initiatives packed inside. The most visible of those, perhaps, are promised $1,400 direct payments to individuals with income under $75,000 and for households with income under $150,000. Those income caps, it turns out, leave very few tri-state residents out. In Dubuque County, 90.5% of households come under the $150,000 mark, according to estimates by the U.S. Census Bureau, and that goes up in surrounding counties, particularly those which are most rural. In Clayton County, Iowa, and Grant County, Wisconsin, 94.3% of households fit beneath the cutoff for these payments. The same goes for 93.7% in Lafayette County, Wisconsin, 93.3% in Crawford County, Wisconsin, 92.9% in Jones County, Iowa, 92.6% in Delaware County, Iowa, 92.3% in Joe Davies County, Illinois, 91.5% in Jackson County, Iowa, and 89.9% in Iowa County, Wisconsin. Quote, "When you're talking 90th percentile of households, obviously you're not just talking about the working poor," end quote, said Eric Munsauer, economics professor at the University of Dubuque. Quote, "That's an awful lot of upper middle class people," end quote. That, Munsauer said, was something that received some criticism from opponents, predominantly Republican, in Congress. But both he and Greater Dubuque Development Corp. Director Rick Dickinson said, at least locally, those payments will mean different things to people on different ends of that spectrum. For the poor or those unemployed, at least in part by impacts of the pandemic, these payments could serve as a lifeline. Quote, "Certainly their hope is we can keep people who have not yet lost their apartments or defaulted on credit card debt so we don't hit systemic bankruptcy," end quote, Munsauer said. Dickinson said there are thousands of people locally for whom that is a danger. quote, there are 5,000 people who were working a year ago who are not working now, even though the unemployment rate is back where it was a year ago, he said. We need to recognize that while many folks have gone unscathed by this financially, for those who are now unemployed or have taken themselves out of the workforce, these dollars will be used to get them back to solvency, keep them in their apartments, end quote. Dickinson said those 5,000 represent about 8% of the local workforce from before the pandemic. Munsauer said these lifeline payments are most likely not a panacea for the pandemic recession. Quote, we want to do it a V-shape, he said, of the recovery. But the evidence we've had since the 1980s are recessions have taken longer to turn around. One theory is just that economic recovery requires more retraining. It used to be that John Deere or the Dubuque Packing Company called a lot of guys back when things turned around. Now we have a redistribution of the workforce, end quote. Munsauer said a good indicator of if the stimulus works are the restaurants on Main Street in Dubuque, how many have had to close by the year's end or how many have recovered. That, he said, is where those higher on the economic spectrum will come into play, whether or not it is with the $1,400 direct payments. Quote, their hope is that we all go out and spend this money, buy new tires for the car, Munsauer said. The worry is, which isn't particularly likely, is that this just gets dumped into the bank account. We'll need people to re-engage that service sector of the economy, which has been hurt so much. Restaurants, hotels, the Wisconsin Dells, the docks on the Mississippi River, end quote. Dickinson said another crucial piece of the recent package is the $39 billion for child care providers through the Child Care and Development Block Grant Program. How that will be implemented or trickle into the tri-states, he said, was difficult to see yet. Dickinson said this has been a terrible need, especially in recent months. Quote, we've recognized for over 6 months that women have been disproportionately impacted by the pandemic, he said. Working women have been devastated. Much of the negative economic impact of it's connected to childcare. Women had to make the difficult choice of leaving their job and coming home to be with their children, both for safety and with the schools going hybrid or virtual, which was necessary, end quote. And our last front page article, Love That Lasts, a continuing series featuring tri-state couples married 50-plus years. Sneaky start to 65-year marriage. Chuck and Nan Higgins have had many adventures together, including celebrating a number of wedding anniversaries while participating in Ragbri by Annie Mel. After hearing about a dance being held in Dubuque, Chuck Higgins and his friend decided to check it out. Neither of them attended St. Columbkill, where the dance was, but went anyway. At that time, attending the dance cost about 50 cents, Chuck recalled, but rather than pay the admission fee, he and his friend snuck inside. Little did he know, but he was being watched. Quote, this young woman came up to me and said, I don't think you paid to get in here, end quote. And I said to her, quote, well, I think you ought to dance with me and then we'll talk about it, end quote. Chuck laughed. Quote, I can't remember if she ever received the money or didn't, but she did dance with me, end quote. Although Chuck didn't know it at the time, Nan Higgins was nervous when she approached Chuck. He was a city boy from Loras Academy, and she was just a small town farm girl, she said, but she tucked away her fear and approached him anyways. Quote, he was good looking. He's still good looking, end quote, she added. At the time of the dance, they were both just 17 years old, Chuck said. They dated until they graduated high school and then married July 30th, 1955. They now have been married for 65 years. Together, they had three daughters, Diana Hansen, Deb Mueller, and Darla Higgins, their daughter who died at the age of four. Chuck worked in manufacturing and in engineering at John Deere for 27 years, and Nan worked for the U.S. Postal Service as well as for Dupaco Community Credit Union as a part-time travel club coordinator, a job that took her all over the nation and world. Back when they were still dating, Chuck was driving Nan home to her family farm in Dubuque area when his car got stuck in the mud, said Hansen, who shared one of her parents' memories. Quote, Nan jumped on the tractor and proceeded to pull out the car, she said. City boy Chuck was impressed. Their marriage has taken them on many adventures, including a pedal bike ride one summer across the United States, Nan's 26 marathon completions, with Chuck as her biggest cheerleader, and both being ski instructors as their retirement jobs, end quote. Nan said they both started riding Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride across Iowa during its fourth year and participated in the ride about 15 times in total. Many times they celebrated their anniversary while on Ragbri, Nan said. Growing up, her parents were constantly on the go, Mueller said. Today, even though they are now both 84 years old, they still bike 5 miles together every day. Quote, they take advantage of life's opportunities and always have fun, she said. They were very independent. They had a lot of their own interests, but still did a lot together. I think that's important in a marriage, when you can be your own person and have different interests, end quote. Mueller said her parents played an instrumental role in helping develop the Heritage Trail into what it is today. They assisted with anything and everything from repairing bridges to meeting with Dubuque County Conservation. Quote, it was just a group that got together when the railroad was being abandoned, Chuck said. It was quite a project, end quote. Hansen said her parents are each other's biggest supporters. She admires the love and compassion they share for each other. Quote, what is unique about their marriage is their teamwork, she said. For 65 years, they have had so many adventures, always been there for each other, and have been and always will be each other's biggest fans, end quote. Chuck said his advice to young couples is marry your best friend. Quote, you agree to everything, you make no promises, and just do whatever you want, end quote, he added, laughing. Nan replied, quote, laughed often and have fun together, end quote. Moving to page 2A for local news, UD study, too much salt and water. Students hope to shed light on the sources of the chloride and its long-term impacts to the area's watersheds by Bennett Goldstein. The salinity of two major waterways in the city of Dubuque is nearing and sometimes exceeding the threshold where it could become toxic to aquatic life over sustained periods of time, according to new data. The findings could shed light on the sources of the chloride and its long-term impacts to the watersheds. Quote, there is too much salt getting into our streams, end quote, said Adam Hoffman, a professor of environmental chemistry at UD, who is supervising the research. Although chloride can disperse from natural sources and even animal feces, the primary source is the road salt that municipalities and property owners spread on sidewalks and streets during the winter. When snow melts in the spring, the accumulated chloride is flushed into waterways. UD students began measuring water samples in the Bee Branch Creek in November. About 14,000 families live within the watershed. From November through early February, chloride levels hovered above 200 parts per million. When water salinity reaches 230 parts per million over a sustained period of time, the water is considered toxic to freshwater organisms. At 250 parts per million, the water begins to taste salty. Recent data indicated that when the city of Dubuque experienced its first snow melt at the end of February, chloride levels shot up to nearly 600 parts per million at multiple sites in the Bee Branch. Chloride at 860 parts per million is considered acutely toxic and can cause rapid die-offs of organisms. Another county-funded study is measuring water quality at sites throughout Dubuque County. Since 2019, UD students have been sampling in North, Middle, and South Forks of Catfish Creek, Catfish Creek proper, and Granger Creek 6 times throughout the year. The North Fork passes through the most urban landscape among the waterways. Students found that 18 of 20 samples exceeded the threshold of chronic toxicity, an average of 263 parts per million. Also concerning was finding that chloride levels remained elevated throughout the year, Hoffman said. Over time, salt can accumulate in the ground and present a continuous source of runoff. The city has taken steps to reduce the amount of road salt it uses after snows, applying about 5,000 tons per year. When conditions are favorable, city staff spray a 23% brine solution atop roads in advance of the storm. The solution uses less chloride and does not bounce from the road like rock salt. In recent winters, the city has utilized 23,000 to 32,000 gallons of liquid brine. City of Dubuque Public Works Director John Klosterman said it would be unrealistic to expect the elimination of all road salt based on Dubuque's hilly terrain. The city must prioritize safety, he said. It is likely that private citizens also are a major source of salt runoff. Quote, some people are just less aware that more salt isn't necessarily better, end quote, Hoffman said. Joey Wallers, a UD freshman who is assisting with the Bee Branch study, said residents might not understand where the salt they apply is traveling. Quote, it shows what residents can do, end quote, he said. Our next article, one new COVID-19 death in Clayton County by the Telegraph Herald. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and vaccination. Sunday's developments included Clayton County had an additional COVID-19-related death between 5 p.m. Saturday and 5 p.m. Sunday, increasing the county's death toll to 55. As of 5 p.m. Sunday, 43,983 residents in the Telegraph Herald's 10-county coverage area have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19, 14.6% of the area's population. Dubuque County had a 14-day positivity rate of 2.2% at that time. Rates for other area counties in Iowa were Clayton County 0.9%, Delaware County 2.5%, Jackson County 2.8%, and Jones County 2.6%. The number of fully vaccinated Dubuque County residents rose by 173. Officials at Crescent Community Health Center in Dubuque announced Friday they will begin to receive an allotment of the COVID-19 vaccine. Crescent is one of 700 health centers selected to administer the vaccine to disproportionately affected populations. Officials expect to receive the first round of vaccines in April. Those who qualify will be contacted to schedule an appointment. Iowa did not provide new county-level hospitalization data on Sunday. The most recent figures from the state as of Thursday afternoon showed that 4 Dubuque County residents with COVID-19 were hospitalized. Also hospitalized were 1 resident each of Delaware and Jackson counties. No such residents of Clayton and Jones County were hospitalized. As of Sunday, no local long-term care facilities were among the 3 listed on the state's outbreak list. The number of statewide cases in Iowa grew by 281 in the 24-hour span, increasing the state's total to 342,778. The state's death toll grew by 8 to 5,641. As of 5 p.m. Sunday, 408,914 Iowans had been fully vaccinated, a 24-hour increase of 14,349. Statewide, Wisconsin reported 274 additional cases as of 5 p.m. Sunday, increasing the state's total to 569,638. Wisconsin also reported 1,251,433 residents had received at least one dose of vaccine, or 21.5% of the state's population. Statewide, Illinois reported 1,464 additional cases in 24 hours, increasing the state's total to 1,209,331. Illinois also reported 1,488,244 residents were fully vaccinated, 11.7% of the state's population. In Illinois, a new call center was launched in an effort to assist residents who do not have access to the internet or have difficulty navigating online services to make appointments to receive the COVID-19 vaccine. The call center is open 7 days a week from 6 a.m. to 11:59 p.m. To reach the vaccine appointment call center, call 833-621-1284. For general questions about COVID-19, call 800-889-3931. And those 2 phone numbers, again, were for Illinois. News in brief, authorities investigating alleged inappropriate incident between former Clayton Ridge staff member and student, Gutenberg, Iowa. Clayton County Law Enforcement is investigating a potential incident of inappropriate conduct between a former staff member and a student in the Clayton County, Clayton Ridge Community School District. The Clayton County Attorney's Office confirmed that an investigation into the alleged incident is underway, but declined to provide further details. Quote, what I can say is that an investigation was started in the last week over reports of inappropriate conduct between a former school employee and a student, end quote, said County Attorney Zach Herman. Sheriff Mike Tuskegee did not return a message seeking comment. When contacted by the Telegraph Herald, School District Superintendent Shane Walls provided a statement. Quote, the district does not comment on investigations or the status of pending investigations, end quote, Walls wrote in a statement. Walls later added, quote, in regard to the question regarding employees, any information which may be responsive to your questions is personnel information, which the district is required by law to keep confidential, end quote. In his statement, Walls later refers to a Facebook post that supposedly makes allegations relating to the investigation. The Telegraph Herald was unable to locate the Facebook post. Quote, although the district is unable to comment specifically on the allegations contained in the post at this time, the district is able to state that several allegations in the post are inaccurate, Walls wrote. Student safety is a top priority for the district. Any information the district receives that affects student safety is dealt with in a timely manner consistent with the district's policies and procedures and the law, end quote. The next brief, forecasters issue winter weather advisory for today over tri-state area. Forecasters have issued a winter weather advisory for the tri-state area in advance of a potential late season storm. The advisory will be in effect from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. today and covers an area that includes Clayton, Delaware, Dubuque, Jackson, and Jones counties in Iowa, Joe Davies County in Illinois, and Crawford, Grant, Iowa, and Lafayette counties in Wisconsin, according to the National Weather Service. The Weather Service reports that mixed precipitation will switch to snow by this morning and bring 2 to 4 inches to the area, which with locally higher amounts of 6 inches. East winds gusting as high as 35 miles per hour could reduce visibility for motorists. Dubuque has received 55.5 inches of snow this season, nearly 19 inches above normal for mid-March. The next brief, top 10 Telegraph Herald's most read stories of week. Details of a law enforcement raid in East Dubuque, Illinois, became the second most read story of the past week at telegraphherald.com, while coverage of a hit and run involving the city's mayor marked the fourth most read. Below are the 10 most read stories on the website from March 8th through Sunday. Number 1, longtime Dubuque manufacturer eyes 5 million expansion new hires. Number 2, police man arrested illegal firearms, drugs recovered in business raid in East Dubuque. Number 3, BizBuzz Monday, new restaurant brings varied menu to Galena. Number 4, authorities cite East Dubuque mayor for crashing into vehicle, leaving scene. Number 5, authorities ID man found in Mississippi River near Savannah's in suspicious death case. Number 6, a life remembered, local woman danced through life. Number 7, Dubuque police investigate apparent suicide connected to standoff. Number 8, Dubuque officials prep for Dubuque concert set to draw more than 2,000. Number 9, BizBuzz Tuesday, Dubuque DQ to reopen, lumber company launches an Alcater Galena eatery planned. Number 10, Dubuque leaders fear proposed loss of metropolitan status would make area invisible. And the next brief, police. The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported Andrew L. Tucker, 36, of Highland, Wisconsin, was arrested at 3:38 a.m. Sunday in the area of West 4th and Iowa Streets on charges of fourth-degree criminal mischief and public intoxication. Zachary J. Thill, 19, was arrested at 11:49 p.m. Saturday in the 1600 block of John F. Kennedy Road on charge of third-degree burglary and possession of methamphetamine. Cody J. Peacock, 29, of Sherrill, Iowa, was arrested at 9:54 p.m. Saturday in the 400 block of Main Street on charges of assault with injury and public intoxication. Court documents state that Peacock assaulted Dylan R. Birch, 28, of Hillsboro, Wisconsin, at approximately 9:50 p.m. outside of Five Flag Center, 405 Main Street. Jeffrey J. Mers, 58, was arrested at 7:51 p.m. Saturday at his residence on charges of possession of a firearm by a domestic abuse offender and possession of a short-barreled shotgun. Almanac, today is Monday, March 15th, the 74th day of 2021. There are 291 days left in the year. On this date, in 44 BC, Roman dictator Julius Caesar was assassinated by a group of nobles that included Brutus and Cassius. In 1820, Maine became the 23rd state. In 1913, President Woodrow Wilson met with about 100 reporters for the first formal presidential press conference. In 1944, during World War II, Allied bombers again raided German-held Monte Cassino. In 1964, actor Elizabeth Taylor married actor Richard Burton in Montreal. It was her fifth marriage, his second. They divorced in 1974, remarried in 1975, and then divorced again in 1976. In 1972, quote, The Godfather, end quote, Francis Ford Coppola's epic gangster movie based on the Mario Puzo novel and starring Marlon Brando and Al Pacino, premiered in New York. Moving to the opinion page, Other View, Nostalgia Can Color Our View of Reality by Scott Reeder for the Telegraph Herald. Dr. Seuss, P.D. Eastman, and Beverly Cleary were among my favorite authors when I was learning to read. but by far my favorite series was Dan Frontier by William Hurley. Frontier was a fictional Daniel Boone-type character who hunted and trapped. The books, which were published in 1959, were exciting and engaging and actually could hold the attention of a child like me who couldn't sit still for more than 15 seconds. So when it was time to teach my oldest daughter, Grace, to read, I purchased on eBay the entire series, which is long out of print. I figured since I enjoyed them so much as a kid that my daughter would as well. But one night, as I read a book aloud to my then 4-year-old, I was brought up short. I didn't like what I read. American Indians were portrayed as thieves. In other references, they were identified as sneaky and untrustworthy. It wasn't something I wanted my children to be taught, so I put Dan Frontier back on the shelf and read other titles to my kids. Censorship? Question mark? Nope, it's called parenting. When children are older, I want them to read and discuss works that use controversial language and images. Works like Huckleberry Finn deserve to be debated and discussed, provided historical and literacy context is given. But for youngsters just learning to read, we need to be careful that their first books don't become primers for hate. I was thinking about my Dan Frontier experience when I read that The Firm created by Theodore Seuss Geisel's family discontinued 6 titles because they contained images and words that were hurtful. Immediately, pundits came out of the woodwork and screamed about the cancel culture. My dad loved to read Green Eggs and Ham to me. In fact, it's the only book I can remember him reading with me. My mom loved to read Are You My Mother by P.D. Eastman, a work which Seuss edited. I have no recollection from my childhood of any Seuss's works being offensive. If anything, I associate them with lots of parental love. But nostalgia and memories are a bit like food and smorgasbords. You take what you want and forget the rest. And there is a lot of nostalgia out there for Dr. Seuss, just as there was for me and Dan Frontier. Seuss wrote many wonderful books. Some of his works fought anti-Semitism in the United States, and he literally illustrated the evils of fascism. But there is no denying some of his images, particularly in some of lesser-known works, are flat-out racist. Blacks and Asians are the object of ridicule with both his words and his paintbrush. Here is how NBC News described some of his work, in quote, "and to think that I saw it on Mulberry Street," end quote. A white man is shown using a whip on a man of color. In If I Ran the Zoo, a white boy holds a large gun while standing on the heads of 3 Asian men. If I Ran the Zoo also features 2 men from Africa who are shirtless, shoeless, and wearing grass skirts while holding an exotic animal, end quote. On the other hand, some of Seuss's works like Horton Hears a Who are stories preaching against bigotry. Quote, "We live in a culture that is very polarizing. People want to know whether his work is racist or not. Some of his work is, and some of it isn't," end quote, said Philip Nell, a professor at Kansas State University who is considered an authority on all things Seuss. When I chatted with Nell recently, he said when he heard that 6 Dr. Seuss books were no longer to be published, he wasn't surprised by which ones. Their content has long been a point of contention among scholars. These are works that are being discontinued. And To Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street, If I Ran the Zoo, McElliott's Pool, On Beyond Zebra, Scrambled Eggs Supper, and The Cat's Quizzer. The news became public March 2nd on Dr. Seuss's birthday. The public outcry shouldn't be surprising. After all, nostalgia can be a tricky thing. We want to remember the happy memories and forget the uncomfortable ones. But that doesn't make for a better world. It's better to look at life with clear eyes and an open mind. To quote Seuss, quote, "Unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better. It's not," end quote. Again, that opinion came from Scott Reeder, and he is a veteran State House journalist in Illinois and a freelance writer. Moving to the obituaries, Joan O'Flattery, it's spelled O'Flattery, Cobb, Wisconsin. Joan O'Flattery, age 85, of Cobb, passed away peacefully after a short illness on Sunday, March 14th, 2021, at UW Hospital in Madison, surrounded by her loving family. Joan was born on September 7th, 1935, the youngest daughter of Ray and Clara Hardy. She had many fond memories of growing up on the Hardy family farm. She graduated from Schulzburg High School in 1957 and went on to attend Edgewood College, majoring in business education. Following graduation, she began her lifelong career as a business educator, teacher for the Highland School District. After retirement, she continued as a substitute teacher in Highland until 2020, when she finally finished her teaching journey of 62 years with the same school district. She touched the lives of many generations of Highland families. Everywhere she went, she was greeted as, quote, Mrs. O, end quote, which always brought a smile to her face. In November of 1958, she met Jim O'Flattery at a dance in Muskoda. They were married on June 14, 1960, at St. Matthew Catholic Church in Schulzburg, and were blessed with four beautiful children: Maureen, spouse Jeff Brunker of Madison; Kathleen, spouse Chris Maurer of Cobb; Colleen, spouse Mark Fingerson of Cobb; and Jim, spouse Mary Evans of Fitchburg. They spent 55 loving years together, raising their family on the farm north of Cobb. In addition to her teaching career, Mom spent many years helping Jim on at the farm. She enjoyed the fruits of her large garden every summer. Joan and Jim had many great adventures while traveling across the United States on motor coach tours, making friends along the way. Two of her most memorable trips were traveling to Ireland with her family. She was able to attend her first Daniel O'Donnell concert in Limerick, Ireland. As he was one of her favorite performers, this was the highlight of that trip. She enjoyed attending many more of his concerts throughout the United States. She took great pride in her 10 grandchildren: Aaron Taylor, spouse Nick, Brianna and Bobby Brunker, Megan Patrick, spouse Erica Walsh, and Sean, spouse Aaron Maurer, Paige, spouse Matthew Veith and Colin Fingerson, Morgan and Donovan O'Flaherty. Joan was excited about the upcoming arrival of her first great-grandchild, baby Taylor, due in August 2021. The wonderful time spent with Grandma will remain with them forever. Joan was preceded in death by her loving husband in 2015, parents, her two sisters, Clara Mae Grogan and sister Marin Hardy, and her brother-in-law, Max Grogan. She is survived by her four children and their spouses, her 10 grandchildren, a nephew, Brian's spouse Angela Grogan, and their daughter Lucy. A massive Christian burial will be celebrated at St. Philip Catholic Church in Highland on Wednesday, March 17, 2021 at 11 a.m. with Father Jim Murphy officiating. Burial will be in the St. Philip Cemetery. Friends may call from 4 to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, March 16th at Soman Larson Funeral Home in Montfort from 10 a.m. until the time of service at the church on Wednesday morning. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, face masks and social distancing will be required. Online condolences may be made at www.larsonfuneralhomes.com. The family would like to extend a heartfelt thank you to the UW Health team for their excellent care of our mom during her illness. Joan truly enjoyed life to the fullest. Her family and deep faith in God carried her throughout her life. An Irish prayer: death leaves a heartache no one can heal. Love leaves a memory no one can steal. We will love and miss you forever, Mom. Funeral services: Zachary W. Brunton, Muskoda, Wisconsin. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, March 16th, Melby Funeral Home and Crematory, Platteville, Wisconsin. Services, 11 a.m. Wednesday, March 17th, at the funeral home. Joan M. Gens, Dubuque. Massive Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. today, Sacred Heart Church, Dubuque. Ronald G. Harris, Galena, Illinois. Visitation at 10 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, March 16th, Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena. Services, 11 a.m. Tuesday at the funeral home. Virginia Johnson, Dubuque. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, March 16th, Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home, 3860 Asbury Road. Massive Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, March 17th, Holy Ghost Catholic Church, Dubuque. Eleanor McGrath, Dubuque. Visitation at 9 to 11 a.m. today, Eaglehoff Siegert and Casper Funeral Home, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. Services, 11 a.m. today at the funeral home. Barbara Moaning, Garnavillo, Iowa. Visitation at 10 to 10:55 a.m. today, Tukey Allen Funeral Home, Garnavillo. Services 11 a.m. today, St. Joseph Catholic Church, Garnavillo. Robert W. Oding, Cascade, Iowa. Visitation at 9 to 11 a.m. today, St. Martin's Catholic Church, Cascade. Mass of Christian Burial, 11 a.m. today at the church. Maggie E. Pierce, Asbury, Iowa. Visitation at 9 a.m. to noon today, Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home, 3860 Asbury Road. Services noon today at the funeral home. Michael J. Stolmeyer, East Malone, Illinois. Visitation at 9 to 10 a.m. Saturday, March 20th, Christ the King Church, Moline, Illinois. And 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. Saturday, St. Andrew Catholic Church, Tennyson, Wisconsin. Services 10 a.m. Saturday, Christ the King Church, Moline. Leo L. Troom, Manchester, Iowa. Visitation at 9 to 10:30 a.m. today, Leonard Munerell Funeral Home, Manchester. Mass of Resurrection, 11 a.m. today, St. Mary Catholic Church, Manchester. And David J. Weber, Dubuque. Visitation at 9 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, March 16th, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Services 11 a.m. today at the funeral home. Moving to the sports section, martial arts. He faces the challenge and he succeeds. Matthew Kiernan becomes Springer's first black belt with Down syndrome by Tim O'Neill. Matthew Kiernan took his sister down, then delivered a finishing punch. Kiernan was in the middle of testing for his black belt, but couldn't help having a little fun. He looked up, smiled at his parents in the crowd, and playfully delivered a few more fake blows to Danielle's head. Several minutes later, Kiernan was beaming as Master Ben Springer tied a new belt around his waist. Quote, "I'm feeling awesome," end quote, said Kiernan, 22. Darn right he was. He had just become the 90th martial arts promoted to black belt at Springer's Martial Arts Academy since its 1998 opening. He is Springer's first black belt with Down syndrome. Quote, "I have thrown a lot of challenges at him. I don't treat him any differently than any other student, and he has stepped up," end quote, said Springer, a 7th degree black belt who works as a nurse in behavioral health at St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Quote, "He faces the challenge and he succeeds. He is a true martial artist. He is disciplined, dedicated, and respectful," end quote. Kiernan started training at Springer's in 2012, and through his dedication soon began rising through the ranks. Quote, "The sign out there says a black belt is a white belt that never gave up, and that's all it is teaching," end quote, Springer said. Quote, "Martial arts, for me, the way I wanted to teach it to the families we have, it's very, very family-oriented, is to teach the children, don't give up. You're going to face some challenges, but you have to work through it. You're going to be stronger for it, and you'll get confidence to face the next challenge. That's what the ranking system does. Each one is kind of like a grade level that they have to go up, and the higher they go, the more that they have to learn. Matthews struggled with that at first, but now his retention is really good," end quote. And now, Springer said, is when the real learning begins. Once black belt is attained, the progression to the next level from first degree or Dan to second degree and beyond is measured in years, not months. Springer pointed to the 7 stripes on his black belt. The journey from the 4th stripe to a 5th took 11 years. Wow. He added the 6th stripe 8 years after that and earned his 7th another 7 years after that. He soon will test for an 8th stripe and promotion to Grand Master. Quote, "If you keep up, it becomes a lifelong journey," end quote, he said. Kiernan must wait at least 2 years before he can test for the next stripe on his belt, but the next part of his journey is now underway. Springer already has Kiernan teaching parts of his classes. Quote, "He's out of his comfort zone, but he does it, and that's how you grow. That's what, and it gives him self-confidence that he can do this," Springer said. "He's got this, and he's got the best sense of humor. Everybody loves him, and he does great," end quote. Kiernan said he's looking forward to doing more forms and teaching, and he'd recommend that others try martial arts for 3 reasons. Quote, "Be healthy, be helpful, and be nice," end quote, he said. Our next sports story, auto racing, rare shot at big time. Local drivers take advantage of opportunity to run at NASCAR track by Jim Leitner. Eric Pollard and Troy Bauer will get a taste of auto racing's big leagues this week. The 2 local drivers have entered the Bristol Dirt Nationals at Bristol Motor Speedway in Tennessee. The week-long event will take place on a special red clay surface temporarily covering the legendary NASCAR track. Quote, "It doesn't come very often that we can do something like that on that big of a track and that big big of a facility, and quote, said Pollard, the 36-year-old Piosta, Iowa native who won the IMCA Late Model Championship at Farley Speedway last season and will compete in the 604 Late Model class at Bristol. Quote, so we definitely want to take advantage of the opportunity, go down and see if we can at least make the show, end quote. Quote, I've never been there before, so I'm sure it will be a bit of a shock when we pull up and see how big that facility actually is. It's going to be pretty cool to have a chance to race on a track you see on TV, end quote. It's been a while since Bristol Motor Speedway put on an event of this caliber, 20 years in fact. It's such a popular event in the auto racing world that NASCAR stars such as Chase Elliott, Kyle Busch, Joey Logano, Austin Dillon, and Corey LaJoie have committed to running in the event that features 8 racing classes, super late models, open modifieds, 604 crate late models, 602 crate late models, modifieds, stock cars, sport models, and Hornets, vying for $500,000 in total. Quote, we usually go down to Florida in the winter, but like I told my wife, as soon as the Bristol Dirt Nationals was posted, we were definitely going to that instead, end quote, said Bauer, who will run in the sports mods class. Quote, I don't travel much in my operation, mostly just up and down the road around here. I get a lot of support from sponsors and friends, but I am my own operation and it costs a lot of money to travel. But this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I'm really looking forward to it, end quote. By placing 23,000 yards of red clay on top of the concrete surface, Bristol Motor Speedway transformed from a 0.533 30-degree banked oval to a 0.533-mile 19-degree track. Practice for the event began Saturday and concluded Sunday when Pollard and Bauer planned to hit the track for the first time after departing Dubuque early Saturday. The week includes a whopping 251 races, culminating with the main shows on Friday and Saturday. Our last sports story, College Roundup, Simon gives pride, big spark, Telegraph Herald. Cascade, Iowa native Bryce Simon went 4-for-6 with 3 RBIs on Sunday to lead the Clark University baseball team to a 9-4, 9-3 doubleheader sweep of Park at Piosta, Iowa. The pride improved to 13-6, 4-0 in the Heart of American Conference. In the opener, Donovan Curiel, Peter Torres, Simon, and Tavon Shadid each collected a pair of hits and combined to drive in 8 runs in support of winning pitcher Carsey Walker. Peter Torres, Simon, and Shadid hit home runs, and Hempstead grad Connor Crabill pitched a scoreless inning of relief. Simon added 2 hits, 2 runs scored, and 2 RBIs in the second game, while Travis McFarland drove in 3 runs. Tayden Patterson, a left-handed pitcher who prepped at River Ridge, Illinois High School, scattered 8 hits and allowed 3 runs in 5 innings to pick up the pitching win. Loras 16-3, Illinois College 6-2. At Jacksonville, Illinois, Luke Fennelly had 3 hits and Max Cullen, Bill Luzzo, Ryan Wallers, and Dakota Church added 2 each in the opener. Cullen and Alex Kelsch homered and 8 pitchers combined for the win. In the second game, senior grad Eric Edmeister allowed 2 runs in 4 2/3 innings to earn the pitching win. Men's lacrosse, Clark 16, Morningside 2. At Clark, Tucker LaBelle scored 6 goals and Caleb Ziefel added 5 to pace the pride. Women's lacrosse, Clark 18, Morningside 3. At Clark, Emily Morin scored 5 goals and Alyssa Humphrey, Jocelyn Lawrence, and Lindsay Wanoski added hat tricks in the pride's romp. College softball, North Park 2-5, Loras 1-4. At Chicago, Taylor Donnell had 2 hits in each game for the Dewhawks, who fell to 0-4. Men's tennis, Loras 9, Wisconsin Lutheran 0. At Heartland, Wisconsin, Kevin Bloomquist won at number 1 singles and doubles to lead Loras. Women's tennis, Loras 7, Wisconsin Lutheran 2. At Heartland, Wisconsin, Walhart grad Audrey Hins won at number 1 singles and doubles in Loras' win. Back to tri-state news, zebra mussels found in pet supplies cause scare. Officials issue dire warnings for aquarium owners to avoid a type of moss ball used by Benjamin Fisher. The discovery of invasive zebra mussels in common aquarium products recently caused a scare nationwide as well as locally, leading to some close calls. Last week, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, as well as state departments of natural resources, including Iowa's and Wisconsin's, began issuing dire warnings for aquarium owners to avoid a specific type of moss ball used. These read a these read a release by the Iowa DNR are, quote, commonly sold in pet stores to help absorb harmful nutrients in the water and limit the growth of undesirable algae in home aquariums, end quote. But this particular crop of moss held a sinister secret. Some were found to be contaminated with the zebra mussel, notorious in local fisheries and streams for crowding out and outright injuring native aquatic species. Jared McGovern, curator of conservation programs at the National Mississippi River Museum, has been fighting the pests for years and attempts to restore area habitats for native species. Quote, we're constantly removing zebra mussels from the mussels we grow at the museum, he said. We have to, at a biweekly basis, open up our systems and directly remove zebra mussels from our mussels, and most non-natives invasives have been accidentally introduced, end quote. McGovern said he had been contacted by someone planning an educational program for the Green Iowa AmeriCorps group in town right now, revolving around the kind of moss ball found to be contaminated. The group heard about the contamination and promptly changed plans. Quote, I recommended a ritual burning, end quote, McGovern said, because, according to the Wisconsin DNR, disposal of these products are not necessarily intuitive. They include freezing the balls in a sealed container, boiling them, or submerging them in bleach or vinegar. Zebra mussels are no laughing matter. They can wreak havoc on infrastructure, clogging pipes used for water filtration, ruining boats, as well as their impacts to the ecosystem. Quote, state and federal law enforcement have been checking pet stores across Iowa and removing the moss balls if they hadn't been removed already, end quote, said Kim Bogenschultz, aquatic invasive species coordinator for the Iowa DNR, in a release. A floor managing at the Petco in Dubuque said that they had removed the products identified as, quote, Beta Buddy Marimo balls, end quote, and, quote, Marimo moss ball plant grab and go, end quote, from shelves even before the DNR arrived, as soon as they heard of the contamination. She noted the product was not particularly popular with customers there, but the store had taken the extra precaution of ordering no moss balls of any kind for the time being. Our next article, Farley continues search for first city administrator, by Annie Mel, Farley, Iowa, in an effort to find someone who can help guide the city as it grows and plans future development. The Farley City Council has started the search for its first city administrator. Farley City Council on Wednesday met with Patrick Callahan, owner of Callahan Municipal Consultants, to discuss finding a candidate who could fill both its open city clerk position as well as a function as a city administrator. Quote, part of the reason why it intrigued me and getting a recruiter is we have had recurring turnover in this position in Farley, end quote, said City Council member Joe Eren. In 2019, Farley City Clerk Ashley Jasper resigned from the position. In January, the City Council accepted the resignation from City Clerk Kathy Godert, who started in the role last year. Eron said the City Council posted the City Clerk City Administrator position on job site Indeed and had 18 candidates, which it narrowed it down to 3. Before the city moves forward with any candidates, council members wanted to meet with Callahan for further guidance as they look to fill the position. Quote, we feel like it's giving us a stigma that we can't keep people, and that's not what we want to give, he said. That's what appealed to us about you, end quote. During the meeting, Callahan presented the City Council with a list of tasks it needs to complete, such as holding a town hall meeting, putting together a salary range and benefit package, and more before he would advertise the position. Eron said the council will take time to discuss information from Callahan before deciding to move forward ahead with his services. Quote, we need someone with more skill sets, he said. We are trying to get a step up because Farley is in a very unique position of where we are growing and property values are increasing, and we need to keep that trajectory, end quote. After further discussion with local property owners who may be assessed for a portion of $1.8 million project, the council unanimously agreed to move forward with a designing phase of the project and would have about 1,500 feet of 9th Avenue Northwest, providing access to more than 24 acres of industrial land, added sewer and water services, and modifying an existing lift station. During a recent meeting, council members asked MSA Professional Services to see how much it would cut from the price tag to remove parts of the project. but during Wednesday's meeting, MSA team leader Jake Huck said the only part to cut would be the sewer. Property owner Todd Horsfield said he wants a sewer added to his property and will work with the council in order to move the project forward. Quote, I like a sewer, he said. I think for the amount I would be paying, it would make me look bad for negotiating to pay all of this and not have a sewer, end quote. Moving back to the opinion page, other view, royal family should take advantage of diversity that Meghan, Harry bring, by Clarence Page, Chicago Tribune, and I'm sorry in advance if I don't get through all of this, was, quote, take down the British monarchy, end quote, on Oprah's to-do list. No, it only looked that way when Prince Harry and his wife Meghan Markle, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, sat down with Oprah Winfrey, our America-born but world embracing queen of television. I watched the spectacle with only mild interest at first as I contemplated the question of why the heck so many of us Yankees still care so much about the triumphs and trivials of our royal British cousins like a long-running soap opera. Yes, they are fun to watch, especially when our taxes, on tea or otherwise, don't have to help pay for them anymore. And now they are even more interesting to watch as they deal with their first royal family member of color since, perhaps, Queen Charlotte, now famously a key character in the hit series Bridgerton. Then I was jerked alert in my viewing by what author-journalist Tina Brown, longtime Royals watcher, would describe as, quote, a hand grenade thrown into the heart of the institution, end quote. She's talking about an institution better known as the royal family, or, quote, the firm, end quote, as Harry and Meghan, among other insiders, call it. Among other revelations, Markle, who is biracial, said she felt she had been silenced and not protected by the British monarchy. When she was pregnant, she and Harry said there were, quote, concerns and conversations, end quote, among the royal family about how dark their son's skin tone would be. This bundle of volatile questions about race brought up in the interview sharply contrasts with the joyful, hope-filled images that poured out of Harry and Meghan's wedding. That joy didn't last long, as Britain's notoriously aggressive tabloid press pounced on Meghan like a bulldog on a lamb chop. At the end of the week before the TV interview, Meghan's approval rating was lower than that of Camilla, Duchess of Cornwall, who has been known as the least popular royal. The public first learned about Camilla, now Prince Charles' wife, when she was revealed to be his mistress while he was married to Princess Diana. Her excoriation in the tabloid press is offered as evidence that Meghan certainly is hardly the first to be ripped by British media. Interestingly, after the two-hour Oprah interview aired Sunday on CBS, a YouGov direct poll found that 44% of Americans thought it was appropriate for the couple to take part in the interview, compared with 47% of Britons who called it inappropriate. The royals also appear to have been missing the chance to reach out to people of color who comprise a majority of the populations that remain in the British Commonwealth, as well as young people who will decide the kingdom's future. That might change now. You could see glimpses of that change in the relationship Harry and Meghan already have with Winfrey. She is one of the few media figures on the planet who has enough public clout to help turn around the storm of negative headlines that have plagued Meghan and, as she disclosed in the interview, driven her to thoughts of suicide. By Tuesday, the Queen appeared to have gotten the message. Buckingham Palace broke its silence, saying the issues raised would be taken, quote, seriously, end quote, and dealt with, quote, privately, end quote, by the royal family. Quote, the whole family is saddened to learn the full extent of how challenging the last few years have been for Harry and Meghan, end quote, the Queen said in a brief statement. Quote, the issues raised, particularly that of race, are concerning. While some recollections may vary, they are taken very seriously and will be addressed by the family privately. Harry, Meghan, and Archie will always be much loved family members, end quote. Good. We need to hear more statements like that. None of us can afford to fall behind in a changing world. Today's royal family, like those in the past, can't afford to forget not only the vastness of their Commonwealth's geography, but also the vastness of its diversity. Significantly, I notice where did the young royals go when they needed to make a hasty move from Canada after what the tabloids called their, quote, Mexit, end quote, from the United Kingdom and Canada. They moved by invitation into a Los Angeles mansion owned by Tyler Perry, the African-American filmmaker and film star. It was not lost on many African Americans on social media and elsewhere that we now live in an age in which a biracial couple of members of the royal family can be housed by a Black American. That's progress. At the same time, the royal family itself is caught in the sort of dilemma that Harry said made him feel, quote, trapped, end quote, for the lack of support he and Meghan had received. I am surprised, like many others, to see his grandparents and, quote, the firm, end quote, behaving much like the depictions we have seen in, quote, The Crown and The Queen, end quote. In those narratives, the Queen appears to be too bound by tradition to fathom the popularity Diana had generated until after she died in a 1996 car crash. Both of those depictions show a vulnerability in the royal family to public perceptions that we don't often think about on this side of the big pond. No, Oprah wasn't trying to take down the monarchy, but none of us can afford to fall behind in a changing world. Again, that opinion came from Clarence Page of the Chicago Tribune. Area news in brief. Four local schools receive Casey's Cash for Classroom grants. Four local schools have received assistance from Casey's Cash for Classroom grant program. Cash for Classroom grants support projects and initiatives at K-12 schools located within communities with Casey's stores, according to a press release. Funding came from donations by Casey's customers during January campaign in partnership with Life WTR, a PepsiCo brand. Area schools receiving grants include Aquin Elementary School, Cascade, Iowa, to help purchase air conditioning units, Beckman Catholic High School, Dyersville, for active panel technology for virtual learning, Our Lady of Guadalupe Elementary, Dubuque, for new playground equipment, St. Joseph Elementary School, Bellevue, Iowa, to replace windows. The next brief, Platteville man arrested on charge of fifth offense OWI, Darlington, Wisconsin. A Southwest Wisconsin man has been arrested on a charge of fifth offense of operating while intoxicated. Kevin W. Hansen, 53, of Platteville, was arrested at 8:49 p.m. Saturday on Wisconsin 23 in Darlington Township, according to a press release from the Lafayette County Sheriff's Department. Hansen also was cited for possession of marijuana and possession of drug paraphernalia, according to the release, which did not provide any additional details about the incident. Gardening workshop set for March 25th in Dubuque County. Iowa State University Extension and Outreach of Dubuque County will host a free gardening workshop from 7 to 8:30 p.m. March 25th. Participants can attend virtually or in person at the Extension office, 14858 West Ridge Lane, Suite 2, according to a press release. Topics include how to choose the right crops for a space, preventing disease and pest problems, and creating a budget for a garden. Registration is required by Monday, March 22nd, and can be made by visiting bit.ly/dbqgardenworkshop or calling 563-583-6496. Nation news in brief. Biden, awaiting probe, declines to call for Cuomo resignation. Washington. President Joe Biden on Sunday passed up an opportunity to join other Democrats calling for the resignation of New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who is under investigation after multiple allegations of sexual harassment. Asked by a reporter if Cuomo should resign, Biden responded, quote, I think the investigation is underway and we should see what it brings us, end quote. Biden, who made the comments upon returning to the White House from a weekend at his home in Delaware, had not previously spoken publicly about the allegations against Cuomo. However, his comments reflect the wait-and-see position on the White House has taken regarding Cuomo's future. On Friday, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki would not say whether Biden believes Cuomo should resign. She said every woman who has come forward, quote, deserves to have her voice heard, should be treated with respect, and should be able to tell her story, end quote. She has said in past weeks that the president supports the investigation. Cannabis bill hits New Mexico stalemate, Santa Fe, New Mexico. State legislators are at a stalemate regarding popular efforts to legalize marijuana in New Mexico, with less than a week remaining to send a bill to the governor. A state Senate panel pulled cannabis discussions off its agenda minutes before a Sunday hearing. Legislators are searching for common ground among advocates for legalizing who say the industry would help New Mexico's economic recovery from the pandemic. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Monday, March 15th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day. And that is it for me today.